Covered a lot of ground so far. It's hour three of Sports Sunday here on The Fan. I am Steve Zabin. Thank you for tuning me in today. I appreciate that. 800-636-1067 is the number. Super Bowl 60 tonight. Santa Clara, Seattle minus 4.5 against New England. It'll be on NBC. The great Mike Tirico, who I am a huge fan of his work and just the way he carries himself along with Chris Collinsworth on the call with both Melissa Stark and Kaylee Hartung as your sideline reporters. The usual array of all kinds of cameras and technical innovations and everything else. NBC delivers the best quality picture of all the networks. And this is where I get super techno nerdy on you, but they devote more bandwidth and less compression to their overall television product. You may notice as you get more and more expensive and wonderful TVs that some of the networks, Fox, CBS, ABC, their pictures are okay, but not great. NBC puts the most oomph into it, so I think tonight will look spectacular. And I hope you got a nice spot to watch it. And if you're watching it quietly alone as a football fan, enjoy. If you're at a party, God help you. That's all I can say. So I got some stuff to talk about before I bring on my next guest, which is Kevin O'Neill, who can be seen on Twitter at Extra Half Point Handicapper and a guy who runs the numbers on stuff. I want to get his thoughts on some prop bets, which are quite popular with people. For the record, I'm on Seattle minus 4.5 today, which is a very Johnny Square play, duh, kind of a pick. I just think they're more explosive now offensively than the Patriots. Early in the year, the Patriots offense was absolutely lighting people up. The last three or four games, including a couple playoff games, not so explosive, which may be a factor of the weather. They played in a rainstorm against Houston and didn't have to do much to win because C.J. Stroud was imploding and nobody could really hold on to the football, including Drake May. And then they played Denver, in which the winter front of all winter fronts swept in and pretty much put people on lockdown in the fourth quarter. But I think New England's more Seattle is more explosive, and I think their defense is also one click better. No disrespect to New England's defense, because they're rated very similar when you look at the numbers. But I think the Seattle defense, which has been top of the heap all year long, is even one click better. So I know it doesn't sound very sexy, but I'm trying to pick the winner, and you enjoy yourself tonight on that front. Other stuff in the NFL this week, there's other stuff that came out that was interesting, including the NFL announcing several of its international games next year, including a game in Australia for the first time ever. They will be sending the Rams and the Niners all the way to Australia to open the season. That is no good. It's no good on a number of fronts. It's too damn far, number one. Number two, it's too good of a game. What are we doing giving away the prime filet mignon games? A division rivalry with two teams that are Super Bowl contenders? No. First game for Australia should be Jaguars-Titans. No offense, Jacksonville. I know you were a good team this year. Let me rephrase that. How about, give me two other scub teams. I can't say Saints and Browns. Young Wes Clark, do you know who got, you know who France got for their game this year? This is so funny.
Who was it?
Saints and Browns.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Oh, please don't monsieur, judge us. Monsieur, this is the finest tackle football game we could possibly give you.
Really? I've been looking at the records of these teams. Are you sure?
Oh, yeah, Saints and Browns. Saints and Browns are very good.
Now, we gave them dog shine, which they should have. We shouldn't be giving anyone these games. But, again, the league is in global domination mode right now. That's what they care about. And, by golly, I'm not going to necessarily bet against them. It is a superior entertainment product. And I have met people from other countries who are not normally NFL fans, mostly Scottish caddies, who have waxed on and on about the teams they like in the NFL and why. And they're not ill-informed for the most part. And I would look at my caddies going, how do you know so much about the NFL? Oh, we get them over here now, mate. Oh, okay. And they're funny the way they talk about it. Look, playing football is a cultural thing that I would imagine most countries are going to take more than my lifetime to even get ramped up to any kind of speed playing it at a young age and developing players. But in terms of just enjoying it once you know the basic rules, oh, yeah, it's good stuff. And so the NFL's bound on getting all that extra stuff. This coming year, they're going to have the most international games ever, and they're going to have more the year after that. Now, the union did say this week out there in San Francisco that they have no interest, no appetite was the actual word, no appetite for a 18th game. To which I responded on Twitter, who said the NFL asked if you were hungry? Because they're going to shove it down your throat if they can. The union should have never caved so easily on the 17th game. But they got hemmed in part because their union is not solid. It's not unified like the baseball union has been over the years. And so, therefore, the league threw them a few bones with fewer padded practices in the spring and a slight increase in roster size and a little bit more guaranteed money for practice squatters. I mean, it was literally a bag of beans. And the players' union said, all right, a 17th game, I guess. I don't know if we'll get to 18 games anytime soon. Seems like the league has slowed down just a bit on this. They're currently pursuing their international domination plans, so we'll see how that goes. The MVP voting was this week, and it was won by Matt Stafford, which I think is an excellent choice. I think he is criminally underrated for certain reasons I don't fully understand, but Matt Stafford is an amazing quarterback. He should be first ballot Hall of Fame, oh, by the way. We'll see about that by the time it comes to vote on him. And there was a bit of controversy because Sam Monson of The Athletic voted for Justin Herbert and had a detailed explanation as to why. And people ripped him. Oh, clown. Really? Herbert? I read the basic explanation by Monson, and I said, you know what? That's a legitimate defense of an alternate vote. People got mad at him because it almost cost Stafford the award. It was very close, but I thought it was a justifiable argument. Here's the problem with MVP. Most valuable player. What does that mean? Well, most valuable. Oh, you mean valuable in terms of good and valuable, or just valuable enough that if you took that player away from a team that's got nothing else, that they would collapse into a four-win joke? Because that is also, quote, value. There should be two awards, which is the MVP and then the MOP. There should be the MOP, which is just the most outstanding player. The other problem with these awards, especially MVP, is because the league has become so dependent on quarterbacks that it's now almost exclusively a quarterback award. Once upon a time, I'm old enough to remember when they used to have running backs win this award, because the league would have running backs who were like game changers. LaDainian Tomlinson, Adrian Peterson, et al. Larry Johnson for a spell. Speaking of Adrian Peterson, the Hall of Fame did induct their class of 2026. Drew Brees, Larry Fitzgerald, Adam Vinatieri, Roger Craig, and Luke Kuechly. That's a good group of five guys. I'm not going to sit here and argue against any one of them per se, because when you start arguing against a guy being a Hall of Famer, you're quickly labeled just a hater. Oh, come on! Or that you don't know ball, and here's a reason why this guy should be in the Hall of Fame. There's too many factors to try to reconcile when it comes to should they be in the Hall of Fame. Was their career long enough? Were they significant enough? Were they that much better than anyone else in their position? Sometimes people say, well, they only made so many Pro Bowls. Well, you can't even use Pro Bowls anymore because look what's happened to that. Oh, yeah, the Pro Bowl games, the Tuesday night gravity-ass flag football game indoors plummeted another 76% in the ratings. It's a race to the bottom on that event, and they're winning. I said during the week on social media, I said it's fascinating because it is a complete joke. Everyone knows it. The viewership is dropping like a rock. When will the league pull the plug? And I'm not sure the answer to that. But anyway, the Hall of Fame class, it's a good five. Me, I'm more restrictive on it. It would have just been Breeze, Fitzgerald, and Vinatieri. Keekly was brilliant, but he played 8 years due to injuries. So I have a hard time. Now, short career guys are in the Hall of Fame. Like the most notable one being Terrell Davis. So it's not necessarily a barrier to get in, but Keekly's career was pretty short. Roger Craig was a great all-around player, but he was never like the best running back in the NFL in any of his years. He was a great utility guy that could do everything. Could block, he could run, he could catch. Good guy, too. He was part of the senior finalists. To me, Breeze is a no-brainer, obviously. Fitzgerald, I mean, both Breeze and Fitzgerald, massive production, elite performance, year in, year out. Vinatieri has two walk-off game winners in the Super Bowl and the hardest, most amazing kick in league history, the 42-yarder in the driving blizzard in the Raider game in the playoffs for New England. That would be the Tuck Rule game. And Vinatieri is also the all-time leading scorer. A long career with three iconic kicks. You got to put him in. But next year, that's going to be dicey. Here's why. The committee this year probably, even though they won't admit it, punished Bill Belichick for his roles in Deflategate and Spygate by not making him a first ballot Hall of Famer. Okay. That's dumb because you're going to put him in next year, so what does that mean? We're punishing him this year. Okay, we're going to punish him next year? No, he's fine. Punishment's over. He's in. Next year, here's some names that'll be eligible. Adrian Peterson. Gulp. Ben Roethlisberger. Whoops. Richard Sherman. Along with Rob Gronkowski, Cam Newton, Antonio Brown, and others. I think Peterson and Big Ben are no-brainers. But Adrian Peterson was absolutely, you know, it's the word I'm looking for. His situation with his son, beating his kid with a switch, was just out of control bad. And he obviously paid the price for that, but an unbelievable player. Big Ben had the, you know, rape allegations, which turned out to not go anywhere, but they were still there. Not good. Sherman, post-playing career, was caught on a Ring doorbell cam, completely drunk, pounding on the door of a family member, threatening to let him in. I mean, totally terrorized him. Now, you know, ended up getting off on lesser charges, is now a rehabilitated media member, part of the Thursday night crew. But I wonder how much the committee is going to want to play tut-tut on those people. Gronk and Newton? Yeah. I mean, great players. Are they Hall of Famers? I don't know. It's a very hard thing to try to fully get your arms around. Coming up, let's get our arms around some prop bets. We'll talk to Kevin O'Neill, handicapper, at Extra Half Point on Twitter. His prop preferences and thoughts on gambling on the big game. You're listening to Sports Sunday right here on The Fan. Patriots going for their seventh Super Bowl title. That would be the most of all time for any NFL franchise. And, of course, doing it with a whole new coach and whole new quarterback from the Brady Belichick era that many people grew to shake their fist at the sky. How do you like the game today? It's Seattle minus 4.5 against New England. For more on this, it is my pleasure to reconnect with a longtime friend of the show. He is handicapper and sports betting analyst, Kevin O'Neill, at Extra Half Point on Twitter. Hi, Kevin. How are you?
Hey, Zabe, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to speak with you.
Yes, it is. It's crucial to get that extra half point. It's always the hook. That's right, the crook.
Absolutely.
So the number's been solid all week. After it opened at 3.5, it jumped to 4.5, and I haven't seen any wobbles. Have you?
Just slight wobbles from different books who probably, starting to get sided on the game. And the total's been a fairly solid 45.5 as well. Some slight up and downs in certain areas. But I guess people think this line is just about right. I think it's an interesting line, Steve. I think it's a very accurate line given how these teams have played over the course of the season. But when you factor in that Seattle was playing their best ball in the first about 10 weeks of the season and then got a little more average down the stretch, beat a totally decimated defense with the Niners, and they were outgained 8.3 yards per play to 6.1 yards per play in the NFC Championship game by the Rams, but did manage to win largely because of special teams. Meanwhile, the Patriots are playing their best ball right now, and I kind of wonder if there might be a little value on the Patriots. And I also see this as being sort of a defensive game. I think the defenses line up well, and I have a little bit of trouble trusting both quarterbacks.
Yeah. Seattle is first in DVOA. That would be a good metric for their defensive prowess.
And they're first in DVOA both against the run and against the pass on defense, which is very, very rare. It's impressive.
The one number that stuck out to me, though, was that New England has almost twice as many sacks on the year defensively as New England. So they do get after the quarterback better as a whole. So you got to give respect to New England there defensively.
Yeah, and down the stretch, they've been getting after the quarterback a good bit, but they're getting sacked as well. I believe May has been sacked 5 times in all three of his games. So that's one of the plays I like. Is total game sacks over, which is around 5.5. I like 5 to 5.5. I like that a little bit. I'm not in love with it, but these teams have been getting sacked.
All right. Of the exotic and or stupid prop bets, do you yourself ever dabble in those, or are those just dumb carnival games?
Well, I guess it depends. I guess it depends how you define stupid. I bet a lot of props. The overwhelming majority of my play in this game are props, but it's based on how Super Bowls tend to play out, and B, how I think this game is going to play out. For instance, Super Bowls typically start slow and then gain a lot of scoring in the second half of the game. So one prop I always like is more points in the second half than the first half, and sometimes you can batch on overtime to that second half if you are betting a little, if you are willing to lay a little bit more juice. But with all these props, I mean, if you shop around, if you're a serious sports bettor, you have way more than just one sports book. So a serious sports bettor or someone with multiple books, they need to take a look at what every book is offering that they have access to and never take a bad price.
Some of these Super Bowl games, as you know, they start out so slow and then they just erupt in the second half. The notable one to me was the Carolina-New England Super Bowl that was looking like a dud, and then the second half was just a rocky fight, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. So I kind of like that betting the second half as the over because of the whole, getting a feel for each other defensively.
Yeah, I think you're definitely onto something there. And again, that's one way I like to play the game. A lot of low scoring first quarters as well. I mean, you could do worse than play the first quarter under the total. 9.5, if I can find a 10, if I can find a first half total of 10, which on a day like today, with a lot of books throwing a lot of stuff up against the wall and maybe not paying attention to every line move in the marketplace, I'd love to find one of those. I'm not going to bet under 9.5, but if I can find 10, that'd be great.
All right, here's a couple of props that intrigued me. Successful 2-point conversion, yes, is plus 270. I got a little something on that, thinking, man, every team now eventually goes for two. So that's one of mine. The other one is Will the Patriots convert a fourth down on their own side of the field? I said yes, plus 260, under the theory that if I got Seattle minus, that at some point New England's going to have the ball late, and they're going to have to go for a fourth down on their own side of the field.
And I guess you were hoping if they do that, they also convert it.
yes, exactly. Look, every prop bet, Kevin, just needs a good story to back your rationing on it, your rationale on it. That's all.
I've got a prop bet I like that I sourced from your neck of the woods.
Okay.
And Neil Greenberg, who, like everyone else at the Washington Post sports section, lost his job this week. Was the best sports betting and sports analytics reporter of any daily newspaper in the country. And in my mind, second place isn't particularly close. He did a little bit of research, whereas, you know, he found that Pop Douglas, the Patriots wide receiver, they have, over the course of the season, they have set up shots for him early in games. I believe he has scored their first touchdown four times over the course of the season. I made a small play on Douglas 13-1 to score the Patriots' first touchdown. Not something I typically do. I don't like those plays that have a million different potential or multiple options. I like yes, no, over, under, this, that type bets and type props. There's less juice in them. But I was impressed enough with Neil's research that I took a little flyer and popped Douglas first Patriots TD 13-1.
All right, good. A lot of time, and I've seen this week, Kevin, where people have unearthed anecdotes from players like Brady, who said, you know, the night before the Super Bowl or the day before our final practice, we installed a whole new set of goal line plays because I didn't like what we were currently working on. And it turned out to be very valuable in the game that they won against New England the first time because they got the game winner on a little, you know, Julian Edelman arrow route at the goal line. And so teams will try things that are new and different for the Super Bowl as an element of surprise. And I believe that Vrabel's that kind of a guy. So I think there are potentially some individual players who get more targets than they got all year long by the time the game is done tonight.
Yeah, that's a good point. And one interesting aspect of this game is I know a lot of people who are interested in playing JSN under on his yardage because their thought is, oh, Patriots are just going to put Gonzalez up against him and man him up and try to eliminate him. But during the course of the season, they had the worst defense against number one receivers in the league.
Who's they? The
number
the
one
Patriots?
Receivers ate them for lunch.
So the Patriots have had the worst defense against number one wideouts?
Yeah, but like even people who have good sources and are good analysts are saying that they're going to defend JSN differently than they've defended any receiver. So, yeah. I mean, that's one I'm sitting out because I just can't figure it out. Like you say, there are things that are different about a Super Bowl with the 2 weeks to prepare than others.
Well, we don't even know if Gonzalez will, quote, travel with JSN.
Yep. And JSN caught passes from five different positions in the Rams game. I mean, he was excellent.
Yes.
He was excellent, as he always is. He's terrific.
Yeah, they were running him out of the backfield on a number of routes.
Yep.
And
yep.
Brady was great in pointing it out, saying, look, if he's back there, pay attention. There's a reason that he's back there. How about this? Most rushing yards flyer on Drake May at plus 500. In case it turns into a scramble fest.
I think that's a little cheap or a little pricey. I mean, I think it should be higher than that. But that being
given the number of good backs that are in the game, like Stevenson and Henderson.
I think just structurally, I think 5-1 is a low number. However, I'm not going to give it to your listeners because the line has moved about 15 points since I bet it. But yeah. I like not a lot of rushing yards in this game. The Patriots run defense, when Milton Williams and Kyrus Tonga and Robert Spillane are in the game, is by far the best run defense in the country. But their stats aren't that good because those guys missed about five or six games in a row together.
All right. Give us one or two juicy ones on the way out the door here for tonight's game.
Sheesh. You know what? I like Darnold to throw an interception. You can say over a half or yes on that for about a minus $1.20 or so if you look around. I know he has had a good season. He had a first good half of the season. He was just okay the second half of the season. He has thrown some head-scratching interceptions over the course of the season. And, you know, I think Vrabel's a very smart defensive coach, and they can get up the middle at him. They have a lot of sacks, and I can see him rushing something, getting happy feet, making a desperation throw and throwing an interception.
Yeah, he had 14 picks on the year. That was third behind Geno Smith and Tua Tagovailoa. So I'm not saying he's going to full-blown.
Look at that level of preparation.
Listen, I have a sheet that I scribbled down a bunch of little nuggets to make me sound smart earlier in the week,
tech.
And it's still here.
That's high tech. Great.
I got to write things down. I got to write it down. All right. If you want to follow Kevin, he's a great follow, at Extra Half Point on Twitter. And as always, if you're out there gambling in them streets tonight, be careful, people, okay? Be careful.
Zabe, always a pleasure. God bless you and your family, and thanks for having me.
All right, there you go. Kevin O'Neill, sports better and analyst, and we appreciate his time. Coming up, Tim Brando will talk about the difference between college and pro when it comes to football. You're listening to Sports Sunday. Joining us now, Uncle Timmy, Tim Brando, joins us on this Super Bowl weekend. Timmy, I know you've called so many great games and moments and sports and everything else. To my knowledge, you've never called a Super Bowl. Do you yearn inside, my friend, to say, just give me one?
No, not at all. And I'll tell you why, Zabes. My passion has always been for college football. And as a kid growing up, yeah, I was, I admired and looked up to Kurt Gowdy more than anyone. And I think Kurt had like seven of them, maybe eight, you know, and then some of the biggest and the best at the very beginning of it. But he also did the Rose Bowl. And, you know, I think I was more excited anytime I saw my idol calling the Rose Bowl than the Super Bowl. So it's all about perspectives, I guess, to some extent.
Isn't
when I got started.
Yeah, sorry, yeah, go ahead.
It is. I think that being born and bred in the Deep South, my passion was always more collegiate. When I was raised in the 50s and 60s, you know, we didn't have an NFL franchise in New Orleans yet. We didn't have a baseball franchise yet in it was just being born, really, in Houston. Mm-hmm. You know, when you think about Bob Short taking the Senators into Arlington, that was, gosh, I was in high school by that time.
Yeah.
So I think
thanks a lot. You guys stole my boyhood team, but it was only one of several owners who took the baseball team out of DC back in the day. There is a weird siloing, I feel, Timmy, between mm-hmm. college football and NFL. And only recently we've had some people work both sides of the street, like Herb Street does.
Yeah.
And like Fowler does when he does bonus NFL games. To me, there's nothing wrong with it, but there seems to be such a fierce cult to both that mm-hmm. many people don't tolerate that working both sides of the street.
Yeah, you know, I got some of that when I was at CBS. Now, granted, I was doing regional games. My thought process to my bosses at every network I've been with, and in the last two, I've worked both NFL as well as college. Obviously, college far more prominently in every game, a national game, whereas with CBS and with Fox, the games were regionally televised. So maybe a lot of people didn't notice it. Maybe my game was going to, you know, Lou Holtz, God bless him. Not, you know,
God bless him. He's still with us.
God bless him.
Yes.
God bless him. He's still with us. But yes. I remember Lou and Doug James and I did a Tennessee Oilers Baltimore Ravens game in 98 at Lou's request, really. He wanted, before he left to go to South Carolina, he told Sean McManus, you know, it's only Lou could. I just want to do one NFL game. Just let me do one NFL game. And so we did the Oilers before they became the Titans, but they had moved out of Houston. So the game was over at Vanderbilt Stadium in November of 98. And we did the game, and we had a blast. We had a blast. But I remember he said, I just think the game was seen in Memphis and maybe parts of Nashville. You know,
that's classic.
We were going to 0.7% of the country, but he was. We had a blast doing it. But I remember some local writers, even then in Nashville, were being critical of. How big is it to have the Oilers coming in? We got a game, and they've got college guys doing our game. That, you know,
yeah. Because
Craig and Lou and I were the studio hosts for the College Football Today that entire season.
Right.
So there, I think a lot of times writers, without even, you know, those are college guys. They don't know anything about the NFL. Football is football, and I love football. But I've oftentimes said this to the bosses, and I said this to Fox when I went over there. I said, if you need some help when there's more regionals that particular week for Fox than usual, you know, call me out of the bullpen. I'm ready to go. The NFL is far easier to call. You got fewer guys on the roster.
Oh, yeah.
The rules are pretty explicit. You don't have to worry about a group of walk-ons coming on. And by the way, the games are always closer because parity has always been involved. You didn't have the kind of blowouts that you had in college, but I would say to them always, I'll do whatever you need me to do out of the bullpen right. in the NFL right. when college is over. But I never want to compromise my role in college football for NFL regional games. I just don't.
Yep.
A lot of guys would prefer, I think, doing the number three or four game in the NFL. And I never wanted that. I wanted to do games that were being seen or at least available on a national level. But to your point, the glut of games that's out there now, and since COVID, we've seen, I think, in some measure, that crossover being a little more accepted because we have all these games being televised. I tell people this all the time, young guys getting into the business. I tell them, you know, there are a lot more jobs available, but those jobs may not be as good as they once were. You know, When I was hired at ESPN and moved up to Connecticut in 1986, there were 10 people working there that were on the air. We had 10 guys. Okay.
Wow.
The original SportsCenter guys, and then John Saunders, who was coming in from Baltimore, and me coming in from Baton Rouge. We were sort of the second wave. And this was the first time that they ever had guys having dual roles going from studio into the booth to do play-by-play. You know, Berman wasn't allowed to do it. Mies wasn't allowed to, and they were dying to do it.
Yeah,
but there were these limitations that the business put on people's careers and their talent that really should not have been there. So I'd like to think that we helped break the barrier. But more than anything else, I look at it from the standpoint of how much fun have you had, and I don't live in regret. Would I have loved to have said that I called a national championship game? Yeah. Yeah, that right. one. If you ask me that question,
that more yes, than and, Super Bowl, oh, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And the only reason I've not done a national championship game is because I was too damn impatient to stay long enough to get my opportunity. You know, I'm told this all the time. Brando, you were the original host of Game Day. Had you stayed,
yeah.
you would have been doing the games that Fowler's doing. I'm like, yeah, but I couldn't wait 25 years.
Well,
I was not going to wait
right.
25 years.
Well, here's the thing, too.
That. I was just too impatient for it.
And you know this as well as anybody. If you can stay and stay and stay and go up and rise and rise and rise, and then a new guy comes right. in and runs the show and he has a different idea and you're out.
Absolutely.
And so what good at all that staying do you? By the way, the great Lou Holtz, currently in hospice care. He's 89 years old. He's a national
God
treasure.
God bless him.
God bless him indeed. It hurts my heart to think that there'll never be another Lou Holtz and that they're not making characters quite like Lou Holtz anymore.
Well, let me say this, okay? There's a lot of Holtz because he had, let's face it, he had swagger. He was well ahead of his time in terms of coaching swagger.
Who do you think is on par Cignetti. Character? What, Cignetti? Yeah, you're
Cignetti.
Right.
Cignetti. Oh, is Cignetti. Oh, yeah.
But
no
to
doubt
get,
about it.
But to get a skinny kid from Follansbee, West Virginia, who looks like he should be anything in the world but a football coach,
right.
with his speech impediment, able to lead young men into great success on the college football gridiron at an iconic place like Notre Dame, man, oh, man, that's hard to beat.
Yeah, no, he's unique. there's not, there'll never be another Lou Holtz.
Yeah.
There won't. I mean, and there'll never be a coach at Notre Dame that will embellish and love and endear himself to the role of being the head coach of Notre Dame any more than Lou Holtz. And I mean, but I'll never forget, we were on our way to that game, and we were on our way to another game. We did, like, I think it was two games. We did one in Baltimore, too. And so we're driving down from New York after our Saturday studio show to go to the Ravens game on Sunday. And as we're going in the limo, it was a stretch, and Lou is kind of leaning back in one, and Craig and I are sort of in the back. And he's literally contemplating whether he's going to take the job at South Carolina. He loves me. She loves me not. She loves me. She loves me not. I mean, he's going on and on. He was concerned. He looked at us and he said, "You guys don't just if I take this out," because he really wanted to take the job. You know, he wanted one more run at it.
Yeah.
But he didn't want his legacy at Notre Dame to be tarnished. So he says, I signed. He sent and still does handwritten messages on Notre Dame stationery.
Okay. Wow.
That's how much he loved being the Notre Dame coach. So he says, "I just don't see you." We said, "Coach, it's like when you're the head football coach and you've won 100 games at Notre Dame, you're always the head coach at Notre Dame. Yeah. It's like being a senator or the vice president. You're always going to be the vice president. You're always going to be the senator. So stop with that. Just take the damn job."
And he did.
I suppose. And he did. And he, you know what? He rebuilt that thing. Yep. And he won 11. He took a team to beat Ohio State in bowl games, which would, by the way, would have been his other dream job, because he started with Woody Hayes as an assistant. If not Notre Dame, it would have been Ohio State. And he beat them twice in consecutive bowl years. So, you know, good for him.
The great Tim Brando, good to chat with him. I had to cut the interview short. I'm running out of time. For more, you can check it out on my podcast, The Zabe Cast. But yes, prayers up for Lou Holtz and his family, as unfortunately life is preparing to take a couple of knees. And this is just a fact of life and being a sports fan. The bright lights and the iconic figures, whether it's Sonny Jurgensen or Lou Holtz, the lights do eventually go out. So get to living while you can. Coming up, final thoughts on a Sunday, plus a mess that landed in the NFL's lap yesterday that will leave one team with some hard questions to answer this offseason. That's next. You are listening to The Fan. The red flags were all there. But now a big red flag has popped up. What a mess this is with James Pierce Jr. in Atlanta. The Tennessee product defensive end, who had a very good rookie campaign with the Falcons, was arrested yesterday. Arrested in a very violent confrontation, according to police reports, in Miami, I want to say. Let me get the story here. James Pierce Jr. accused of intentionally crashing his Lamborghini into his ex-girlfriend's car multiple times, trying to stop her from getting to a police station, according to law enforcement sources telling Andy Slater, who is a on-air host at Fox Sports South Florida. The incident created a police chase that led the cops to apprehending Pierce. There is footage I've seen of him being arrested. Pierce also intentionally drove into a police officer, hitting the cop's knee in an effort to get away. The Falcon linebacker is, quote, lucky to be alive after one high-ranking police source talked to Slater about the incident. This is a player I then quickly Googled. James Pierce Jr. Red Flags NFL Draft Story. After story, after story. Fan cited. Anonymous AFC staffer raises red flags of James Pierce Jr. out of college. Sportingnews.com. What did James Pierce Jr. do? Explaining the Tennessee star's legal problems. Facebook. Tennessee defensive end James Pierce Jr., who reportedly has the worst character of anyone in the first round. And the Falcons traded up to get him. Many are saying you should never play another down in the NFL. I want to see more about the facts, but we'll see. It's always been an awkward dance between how bad was the thing versus how good is the player. If the good is way up here and the bad is kind of here, Yeah. They'll figure out a way to sort of muddle through it. It's going to be dicey. It's going to be interesting. It's not something the league wanted, obviously, on the doorstep of the big game, Super Bowl 60 tonight in Santa Clara. That'll be it for me today. Thank you for listening and for tuning in. Thank you to Will Clark for producing so capably this morning. I said Will, my bad. Wes Clark. Sorry, Wesley. I know you're Wes, for God's sakes. I'm reading.
It's okay.
I'm panicking to hit my out. Have a great Sunday, Wes, young man. Kevin Sheehan, thank him for coming in. Dan Steinberg as well, plus Kevin O'Neill and Tim Brando. Have yourselves a wonderful Super Bowl Sunday. And we will see you next time.